You're listening to Bloodline, Episode 0, The Introduction. Bloodline traces the history and culture of the gamefowl community, including cockfighters as well as gamefowl fanciers who could not, for one reason or another, consider themselves cockfighters. They may raise the birds for show or hobby. There are, of course, a number of businesses that rely on the industry of gamefowl, not all of which are cockfighting. There are numerous former and inactive cockers, and I would put myself squarely in this non-cockfighting category of the gamefowl community. I'm not a lawyer, and none of the material should be considered legal advice. It is offered for historical and educational purposes only. In the Bloodline debut episode, you'll hear Tommy Carano's story as we kick off a series of episodes that look at gamefowl and the law. We'll talk to Tommy about his history with gamefowl and the fight for his freedom in a federal court case a few years back. He's very active in his work, and we'll hear the latest in his story, and we'll also hear from the gamefowl show standards expert and longtime chicken man, Anthony Seville, in that episode as well. It's a great way to kick things off, and a big thanks to those two guys for the honor of being our first guests. Though it is often left out of textbooks or self-censored by writers who omit or opt not to publish for fear of prosecution or backlash from colleagues or peers, gamefowl have a long history with human civilization. Today, chickens are by far the most prolific animal on Earth, thanks largely to the bird's popular and inexpensive source of protein in human diets. But chickens were domesticated and distributed around the world for the purposes of cockfighting centuries before modern barnyard breeds even existed. Already commonplace in the earliest civilizations' written histories, it seems that wherever people traveled, gamecocks went too. Some examples we may draw from in future episodes include the early Syrian and Persian civilizations, who gave religious significance to the fighting cock. The Persians would later make a name for themselves in this sport, producing the family of fighting fowl, given the same name and coveted for its speed and quick ability throughout Mesopotamia. This fact did not stop the Greek military leader Themistocles from having his whole army observe a cockfight. At the time, the Athenian commander was orchestrating the allied Greek maneuvers that would lead to the definitive defeat of Xerxes at Salamis. As his men watched the cockfight, Themistocles told them, "They undertake this danger neither for their country, nor for their country gods, nor for the monuments of their ancestors, nor for fame, liberty, or children, but that they may not be worsted or yield to one another." The moment was significant enough to merit Athenians to institutionalize the sport thereafter, making a law after the victory to celebrate the occasion once per year with a cockfight in the local theaters. The Romans are credited with introducing gamecocks to the British, whose love of cocking would eventually rival that of any civilization before or since, enjoying near universal acceptance among all classes. British schoolboys were given a cockpence allowance for the regular cockfights held at school and officiated by the clergy in return for the losing bird. Kings and other royalty found competition for their fighting cocks at the Royal Cockpit in Westminster, among other locations. The sport was so favored among nobility that it was perhaps derisively called the royal pastime or royal diversion. Pits were common throughout London, giving several of the city's streets their names, and its popularity throughout the island would leave its mark throughout English culture, eventually following the British to the colonies in America. Among colonials, the sport was second in popularity only to horse racing, enjoying the patronage of George Washington, as well as other founding fathers, presidents, statesmen, and everyday citizens throughout the country's timeline, such as Andrew Jackson and his Mexican contemporary, Santa Anna. Among cocking lore, it is said that the bald eagle was only narrowly selected as the national emblem over the gamecock by a single vote, and that Abe Lincoln was given the moniker of Honest Abe for his fairness in officiating cockfights. Bloodline will explore these claims and more as we uncover the hidden history of the ancient pastime. Since this show explores the stories of the gamefowl community, it seems necessary that, as a way of introducing the show and discussing my favorite topic, that I should share some of my own story first. My name is Jesse Sidlauskas, and I grew up in North Texas. When I was 5, my family bought some land outside of town from a family friend, also a fellow cocker, a Merriman. In a year or two, we had somewhere between 30 and 50 roosters on the yard. My grandpa on my dad's side raises chickens still, and a couple of my uncles on that side have kept yards of their own at various times of my childhood. As a child, I didn't find much to like about the chickens. For one, the work is a lot harder if you don't care about it. And this went on until I was 9 or 10, when Dad insisted that my younger brother Andrew and I put up a show of our own. With Dad's advice, Andrew and I picked the roosters and put them through the keep. After a week or so, they started perking up, and Dad made sure that we noticed that they were acting differently, telling us what he would do if it were him, but making us do all the work, leaving all the decisions to us. We picked the event, a 5-cock gaff derby at a small pit in Oklahoma, the name of which I've long since forgotten. All proceeds would be split evenly between the three of us. At the derby, Andrew and I took turns backstage holding the roosters while Dad tied the gaffs in the cock house before the fights. I think the derby had 20 entries with a $100 buy-in. After paying the buy-in and getting one of us an admission ticket, we had $20 left over for a gentleman's wager with whomever we'd meet in the first fight. Andrew and I had to swap the admission ticket back and forth whenever we needed to go to the car or walk past the office for any reason. We won our first fight and began to get very excited until we lost our second fight. For the next 3 hours, as the heat climbed into the 90s outside, Andrew and I bet against and cursed and prayed for the death of the favorite in every subsequent fight. We may have been the only ones hoping to see a 20-entry 5-cock break open last another 2 hours and give us a shot at the money. But that's exactly what happened. We won our third fight, giving a loss to the would-be solo winner of the day. We went on to win 2 more after that, giving us a share of the pot with 3 other entries, meaning the money wasn't much to write home about, unless it was more money than you'd ever had in your pocket at one time. I was more concerned with the trophy, but we drew straws for the hardware and lost. We took a Polaroid, which you could find on the website at bloodlinepodcast.com. After that, I was hooked. Dad had said that the roosters will always make good on any time you invest in them, and now I could see that that was true. Over the next couple years, as I got more involved on the chicken yard, I started dreaming of becoming a professional cocker when I was older. But within a decade, that dream would be legally forbidden. With the hope of creating an honest account of gamefowl in this country, and so my son might have a trustworthy account of the cultural tradition his family shared for 3 previous generations, I began writing a book about cocking. And hoping to share some of what I find while researching that book, I've created Bloodline. Bloodline will begin with a series of episodes in the not-so-distant past, in an effort to size up the current landscape in the U.S. for game farmers and to try to make some sense of how we got to where we are today. Some of these episodes will explore a time period that's always puzzled me. In 1995, popularity in the sport was as high as it had ever been, and there was good money to be made for a chicken farmer, at least. For most cockers during that time, if you could whip them down the road, your birds could compete and sell anywhere in the world. But a battle was brewing with the animal activists, and the fight looked to be a protracted one. The cockers had a passionate following and legal status in several states, amounting to readily available manpower and an industry that could put cash behind them. We'll take a look at the expensive battle that was waged against cockfighting as well as the effort to defend it. I've been surprised by what I'm finding in these episodes and look forward to sharing it. But first, we'll explore something a little more recent. No story quite seems to illustrate the current landscape for gamefowl farmers in our country than that of Tommy Carano's. Tommy served a year in prison for conspiracy to violate the Animal Welfare Act. The case provides some recent ruler by which to gauge the length of the long arm of animal law. As far as I can tell, it's the first Animal Welfare Act animal fighting conspiracy case in the recent era of that legislation. I'll give a rundown of Tommy's case file, and then we'll talk to Tommy, as well as the world-renowned poultry show standards expert and longtime game farmer Anthony Seville, who conducted walkthrough inspections of Tommy's fowl being held during the trial. That should get us through the first few weeks. If you'd like to join me on the show or have a story that you want to see covered, let me know. You can find my contact information on the website at bloodlinepodcast.com. Bloodline is created by me, Jesse Sedlauskas. Music for this episode is by Lobo Loco, You Get the Blues. For supplemental links, media, photos, and information about upcoming episodes, be sure to check out the website. Again, that's bloodlinepodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to your favorite podcast player. Y'all keep them crowing, and thanks for listening. Thank you.